Hello and welcome back to Reality TV. It's been a couple weeks, but the bitch is back and I'm feeling fantastic, reinvigorated, refreshed, a little annoyed with the way the school year is going, but you know what? We'll all survive. Now, I want to thank all of you right off the bat for going with the flow over on Patreon. And please don't fast forward if you're not a Patreon subscriber. It's not going to be a pitch here. I just want to explain what is going on over there and why it is no longer patreon.com/realitytvpod. It is love to hate TV because we love to hate TV. So here's the deal. I invited Amanda from Amanda Loves to Hate Teen Mom and my co-host of Total Request Podcast to merge her Patreon with mine because, in a nutshell, her Patreon account, including her money and her entire library of years and years of content, was allegedly hacked by a, I'll put this in my words, disgruntled ex who has been making her life a living hell, in my opinion. And I'm only human. I feel like I did what all of you guys would do. And it's something Amanda and I had actually been talking about doing for about 2 months for a number of reasons. So in an attempt to get all of her hard work and content back that was stolen, and as a way to get all of our listeners to find both of our content in one place for one lower price pledge, you're going to find it all on patreon.com/lovetohateTV. So if you are already a patron of mine, you don't have to do anything. You are still going to get my solo Patreon episodes. This week, I'm going to be talking about the latest episode of 90 Day Fiancé Happily Ever After. So if you are not into Amanda's content, don't worry. Nothing is changing with my Patreon. If you listen to Amanda and you subscribe to her Patreon, it's your lucky day because now you're getting both of us. You're going to have access to all of our entire libraries of past bonus episodes. We are categorizing them so you can search for any topics you like. For example, I cover a lot of documentaries, listener secrets, my experiences as a surrogate. We, of course, do our crossover episodes of Teen Mom Marriage Boot Camp. We've even done some episodes on true crime, like Diane Schuler. Remember, There's Something Wrong with Aunt Diane. And I believe we did the story of Kitty Genovese, too. But I could be just making that up in my head. So anyhow, you're going to get Amanda's bonus episodes. You're going to get her entire library, crossovers, all that good stuff. And the best part is, we were able to do the math where you are not paying anything more than you were before on either of our Patreons. If you currently subscribe to my Patreon, you're grandfathered in. You will not pay another dime more than you were before. You can even lower your monthly pledge right now if you want. And for the month of September only, if you are thinking of signing up for our Patreon, now's the time to do it because come October 1st, prices are going to have to change. You can sign up at any tier right now. You can either get a sticker, a mug, a t-shirt, a hoodie, and you're going to lock in that pledge level, that pledge tier forever and ever, and you will not be charged what the price is going to go up to in October. So if you're thinking about it, now's the time. Take a peek. We have an amazing new logo. The proofs for the merch are going to be coming soon. I'll post them over on Patreon. It's just gorgeous. So there we are, patreon.com/lovetohateTV. Now, so much has happened. I mean, historic changes in our political landscape, but more importantly, our TV landscape. Our children, our children's children are going to look back on the last week of August, early September 2020 as a very confusing time, really a forced gut check. And obviously, I am speaking of Ms. Dorinda Yvonne Medley. I don't really know that her middle name is Yvonne, but I just get that vibe. But yes, Dorinda was fired from Real Housewives of New York. Whoever would have thought that Dorinda, the Dorinda that was so beloved from the start, would be fired? The hostess of Halloween, the lover of a holiday-themed sleepover party at Bluestone Manor, the gifter of that enormous John-sized nutcracker to Bethany, the owner of the yellow plates that reminded Ramona of sunshine, and daily nap-taker Dorinda medley, gone. And man, she went out in a disgusting, narcissistic blaze of ugliness. Now, we all know Dorinda can get really bad, mean, vicious drunk, but this was a lot. I mean, it really goes to show you that no one is safe from the housewives curse, even our most beloved. Dorinda is now joining the ranks of Siggy Flicker. I know, I said what I said, and I'm not going to apologize for it. Dorinda drank her own Kool-Aid, and she started to believe, much like Siggy, all those ass kissers that are tweeting her and telling her that she's so funny, she's so charming, and probably indulged in, you know, too much alcohol and cocaine, allegedly, but now she is gone. And I really enjoyed Dorinda. I thought I was probably one of the top 1% of her fans because she brought us some great iconic moments. She shoved her face into a cake with several lit candles one year, and she horrified New York society women with taxidermied sea mammals in their beds. But it's over. The love chapter is over. She's lost her goddamn mind, and her batshit crazy flag was flown at that reunion. Or at the reunion, what am I talking about? The finale. She was screaming at the producers, and that truly was a peek of what she's like when cameras are not on, or they probably are on, but all that shit was cut on the cutting room floor because she was Dorinda. How are you going to have Dorinda, who's making things nice in one episode, and then you're showing her as an insane person in the next? Our minds and our bodies were not ready for it. And you know what? Maybe Bravo producers were like, you know what? Our country is ready for this. If we can get through this pandemic, I think the world is ready to see the new Dorinda. And it was rough, but she's just joined the ranks now of, I'll say, Siggy, Jill, maybe Jacqueline Laurita, although that's kind of like a different flavor of crazy. And I'm going to argue Lisa Vanderpump and Caroline Manzo. I don't come at me. Like I said, it's 2020. A lot has gone down this year. It's possible I'm not seeing things clearly, but I think that's going to be a genre of housewife that maybe they'll come back some season, and maybe we'll just look at all these seasons with all of them as a really bad fever dream. All right, hold on a second. I guess I should mention that bitch Bindi was stalking me again over this last week with her little baby Rue pouch, her little baby Rue on the way, and honoring the anniversary of her dad's death. I'm just saying, she's like pretty much obsessed with me and she needs to back the fuck off. All right, let's get into Married at First Sight. Oh, you guys, I really love this season. What a season to jump into if you are new to this show. You know, we're not used to seeing people get along and like each other. People genuinely smiling. People genuinely brushing their teeth over and over and over again. All right, that part can go. The brushing teeth scenes are back, and goddamn, some of them are very aggressive with the teeth brushing, but I appreciate that. I appreciate that they are brushing as opposed to, you know, not brushing. I'm not going to name names, but I'm just saying I've seen quite a bit of plaque build up on someone who claims to be brushing their teeth a lot. Brett. Okay, let's get going with Amelia and Bennett. My first question right off the bat, I don't know where exactly this came up in the episode, but I have been thinking about it nonstop. They're eating some sort of slimy fruit. It didn't quite look like a melon, maybe a mango, but I'm not really familiar with mangoes, papayas. But they were talking about Amelia wanting to eat the pit of it. What is it? What were they eating? It looked like it could have been an eggplant, but is there a pit to an eggplant? I've never actually eaten eggplant before. It just kind of looks mealy to me. Someone help me out here because I can't get my mind wrapped around it. Perhaps a pineapple, but it didn't look that yellow. And pineapple has a core, not a pit. And you can eat the core. It's actually very good if you're trying to conceive because it has bromelain or something like that in there. So eat the pit if you're wanting to have a baby. It's good for your ovaries or something like that. Let me get my medical degree out and I'll let you know. And then you can let me know what it is that they were fighting over with the pit. Moving on, Bennett meets with this friend of his. And I think for no reason whatsoever that this woman friend of his is absolutely in love with Bennett. It's just a vibe I got because it's almost as if this friend of his wanted to draw attention to the negative or the doubt that Bennett should be having about Amelia. Or maybe it was just an immature opinion of hers because she kept talking about her friend group. Like, Bennett, our friend group will change if you move away. You have to stay. You can be married or be in a relationship and still have your friend group. That's just part of growing up. It's not one or the other, but it could have been I just disliked her because she seems like one of those people who wears ugly Christmas sweaters. You know, not to be kitschy, but because they're nonconformist, I just love red and green together. Twee. Later, she's going to be LARPing in the park. Mark my words. Now, while Bennett is suffering in silence and a really bad Cosby sweater, I mean, talk about a time to be quirky. Amelia is meeting with her friend who might as well be a sister or a twin because they had the same sallow skin tone, the same, I'm assuming, aversion to basic grooming. And I suspect they might dabble in a friendship plus benefits. And no judgment to that whatsoever, because what you do in your bedroom or with your friend group is your business. I'm just super nosy and observant and curious. And although Bennett would probably be all too happy about that potential, I want to know about that potential right now. It was just something the way they were hugging and holding. And I think this friend was in a previous episode and she was like rubbing Amelia's leg and they were holding hands and stuff. Again, no judgment. I'm just super nosy. Okay, now, actually, you know what? I don't think that friend was at the housewarming party. Like, if they're such good friends, why wasn't she there? Was it because she's the other woman? She wasn't one of the friends talking about spooning. Maybe because her heart couldn't take it. Or maybe she was there and I was just distracted by them making that mural. Let's talk about this mural as long as we're here. First of all, I'd be having a panic attack because there'd be paint and crafts and glitter all over my floor. Although it's a rental, so they probably don't give a shit. But they seem like they just, you know, live that way where if there's paint splattered on the baseboards, well, that's just memories in the making. It gives it personalities. But when I see things like art mediums of pom-poms and butcher paper and tempera paint, I start twitching, okay? I can't look at something on my wall every day that's got no symmetry. Everyone's doing a different type of art. Like, there was some Jackson Pollock going on. There was some Monet kind of swirly, durly. Or is that the one with the little dots? See, exactly my point. I'm not artistic enough to appreciate that. I would look at that mural over my couch and I would be twitching nonstop. I wouldn't be able to live like that. But here we are, truly soulmates, because no other people on earth could live the way they live. Amelia and Bennett are climbing all over that couch barefoot, hanging it up on the wall. They're just so, I suspect, filthy and dirty and lovely and smart and adorable together. And I want them to stay together forever. I see Amelia being the breadwinner. I see Bennett writing some script or play or screenplay. What's the word? I'm real rusty today, so just go with me here. But I can see him being that dad that's at the park with the kid that's wearing a dress and jeans on his arms, you know, because he's letting him express himself. And then he'll come home like that and Amelia's gonna be like, oh my God, I love you so much. Now let me go chart my patients. They just have a vibe and I love it. Okay, on the flip side, Henry and Christina. Oh my God, this episode was so good. We saw their true colors shining through. It was really a Cyndi Lauper moment. It turns out that Mr. Shy Guy Henry isn't just shy. he's shy, and he has strong opinions, mainly that Christina is an asshole. Like I have been saying, like many others have been saying, it's not just that Henry is shy, it's that he's just not into Christina. And I don't blame him. You know, Christina is what the French call les incompétents. Yes, that's a line from Home Alone, and no, I don't know exactly what it means, but I like to use it all the time along with the buzz your girlfriend woof. But she is what the French call les incompétents. She's got that je ne sais quoi, that look on her face. You just don't like her. You can tell by looking at her. I don't want to overuse this phrase, but, you know, she's a Karen. She's got that gnarled up nose thing, not quite like Brett, but a side eye, especially when she's barking at people. You know, that's not going to turn Henry on. He's not going to be like, oh my God. When she snapped at those producers, I was like, pull my pants down right now. It doesn't work that way. She thinks she's this demure 1960s flight attendant. And she's just like so sexy and so attractive. And let's talk about that, actually. She's a flight attendant. Anyone want to be on a flight where Christina is supposed to be the one saving your life or helping you get something? I would be terrified to ask Christina for something on a flight just by the look on her face. She would be the flight attendant version of the soup Nazi, for sure. She has the look on her face where, okay, I very often will overcompensate or try to get people to like me so much so that I will take on their job, like the baggers at the grocery store. I can't tell you how many times I've gone shagging and retrieving carts just because I want to be liked. I mean, it's ridiculous. So she would be the type of flight attendant where I would be taking on her shift so she could like take a load off during turbulence. I'd be like, I'll collect the trash. No, really, it would be my pleasure. She's not the flight attendant you would want to bother if, you know, God forbid, a window crack or you see a wing on fire, because she would be like put out like, oh, yes, ma'am, I know the wind will blow the fire out. She is high maintenance, and it may not be like with physical things, but I see what Henry is saying. It's like she requires a lot of, you know, ass kissing, kind of fawning over, lots and lots of thank yous, and she's got to have things done her way. It's definitely not about the physical things because she dresses like it's 1994. I mean, her wardrobe is worse than mine, and I'm telling you, that says a lot. And her passive-aggressive digs at Henry's apartment, every week she keeps going back to, you know, he's got a tiny house too. Well, bitch, let's see your apartment. But you know what? We haven't. You know why? Because I suspect she still lives with her mommy. But she's not going to tell us that because she has to have us thinking that she's this jet-setting, many stamps in the passport kind of gal. Ugh, I just want to smack that goddamn denim smiley hat right off her stupid oversized head. What was that hat? And what was with her friends, who automatically I don't like them and I question because I'm like, oh God, they're friends with Christina. But why did she put them up to bullying Henry into making the first move and making out with her? I don't feel like my friends would do that for me. Just walk up to some guy and be like, okay, so why aren't you like, you know, throwing her down and, you know, just going for it? Oh, you know why? I can actually answer my own question. It's because I'm not the kind of girl like Christina is that just assumes that every man is attracted to her. You know, a little humbleness would go a long way for Christina. You know, assuming that every man is just going to want to initiate sex with you just because of your sparkling personality, that's very presumptuous to me. And yeah, I get that they're married, but that's how I feel, and my opinion is not going to change on Christina based on the previews and what we've seen of her. All right, now, oh, okay, the fight that happened over these fish bowls that they were making, that was bizarre. Like, there was so much tension and resentment for both Henry and Christina on both sides that what they were bickering about wasn't even what was pissing them off in the moment. You know what I mean? Christina just wants like a macho man who's just going to take her and ravage her and throw her around. And Henry is the type of guy who wouldn't even do that even if he were attracted to her. Henry needed to be with Olivia or someone who's confident and doesn't need a man to tell her that she's hot all the time and also knows how to read the room and back off and use manners and politeness. Oh, and I forgot to say this earlier. I should have said this right off the bat because this really kind of concerned me and pissed me off, probably because I've been a teacher and I've had students with special needs and people in my life who also had this habit. And I'm talking about when Henry mentioned something to Christina about not making eye contact. She said, "Why can't you just look at me?" And he said, "Well, you can ask Dr. Pepper about it. I've talked to her about it." I thought that was so mean of Christina to bring that up because I think it's pretty clear Henry has nervous tics. So to throw that in his face, either she's an idiot and she doesn't see it, or it's just a sucker punch. Like, am I the only one who sees him looking away and turning his head as a coping mechanism when he's nervous? He doesn't want the cameras to catch him ticking and twitching, so he looks away. He compensates. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think we need to draw attention to it. I think it was just Christina's way. Did I say Olivia earlier? Okay, whatever. I got Olivia on the brain. But I think it was just her way to stick something at him. Be like, yeah, I notice you're doing that. And that's weird. Because she is the type of girl that would do that. And yes, I'm projecting, much like I did with John Francetic, but I'm not going to take it back. Hey, stop worrying. I got your back. I have the best thing for you. Green Chef. See, how did I know you were stressing about what you're making for dinner again? Green Chef knows dinner is stressful and it's every day, and sometimes we need a little help. I know my kids are always wanting something different. They're tired of the same old chicken and pasta I'm making, and that's why I love Green Chef. Green Chef is a USDA certified organic company. Their meal plans include paleo, plant-powered, keto, and balanced living. I like the balanced living plan because, you know, let's be honest, I'm from the Midwest. I love my meat, potatoes, my kids love pork, I love chicken and fish, and of course, I have to somehow fit in all those fruits and vegetables that we should be eating. That's where Green Chef really comes to my aid. And because we're eating at home all the time now, we don't do a lot of takeout and delivery. Green Chef could not make it any more easy for me to cook healthy meals that are super flavorful, they stay within our budget, and have I even mentioned that every meal contains a variety of organic ingredients? I could not tell you how to get around an organic food section, but I know good food, and Green Chef is killing it in that department. Last night, Dave took over the kitchen, and he and the kids made a spiced pork tenderloin, that's their favorite, with cherry barbecue sauce, and my kids never clear their plate. They are notorious picky eaters, but they polished off their potatoes, and that made me kind of disappointed because I wanted more of them. But between the pork, potatoes, a huge portion of kale salad, I was honestly full, and that rarely happens. And you can mix up your meals every week too, because you pick which meals you want. I started this new weekly tradition of having my mom and my niece over for dinner once a week, but it can be tricky because my niece is a vegetarian. So tomorrow I made plans and I ordered ahead of time to make Green Chef's Korean fried rice with kimchi. I was a little intimidated when I ordered it because I've never been great at making Asian recipes, but I opened up the recipe card and it could not be any easier, especially when all my ingredients are prepped and my sauces are made. You know, no shame in my game. I really can't wait to make it tomorrow. And really, all of Green Chef's recipes are quick, easy. Everything is pre-measured and mostly prepped. It's delivered right to your door, packed and hand-picked, high-quality ingredients, and some really nice cooler packs in there, too. It's worry-free, and Green Chef is the most sustainable meal kit, offsetting 100% of its direct carbon emissions and plastic packaging in every box. So what are you waiting for? Use code REALITV80 to get $80 off your first month, plus free shipping on your first box. Go to greenchef.com/REALITV80 to redeem this code and for more details. You heard me right. I'm going to link that in the show notes because this is honestly a fantastic deal. $80 off your first month and free shipping. That's greenchef.com/REALITV80. Green Chef, the number one meal kit for eating well. All right, Karen and Miles. It's going to be a big confession time because I had a revelation and it's kind of hard to admit, especially this year, But as the Bible or Oprah or someone once said, the truth will set you free. I am a Karen. It was as if I was speaking through Karen's mouth when she was telling Miles that she doesn't like to be the one to walk in a room and start flirting with someone or initiating compliments to get closer with a man. I know it's gonna be hard to believe, but back in the day, if a guy tried to flirt or say something complimentary to me, my brain would automatically go to like, oh my God, what a freaking weirdo stalker who does that. But on the flip side of that, if there were feelings there for me on my part, I just could not get myself to flirt or to show like that softer, sexy side. You know what I mean? Like I just felt what Karen was saying in that moment, which she really wants Miles to do. I think what we want Miles to do is just go for it and make the first move. And then it's going to make it easier for her to, you know, lean into it. She doesn't want some shy guy tiptoeing around and being all polite because she will never make the move. She wants him to just take control. I'm talking about Karen, that is, not me at all, who's a married woman who also thinks Miles is extremely hot. Not at all. And I want to point out the difference between Christina and Karen because I recognize it's a conscious thought that Christina and Karen both want a guy to initiate. The difference is Henry is a shy guy who would never initiate even if he was attracted to her. And Miles isn't shy. He's just being too polite. I think Karen was getting it though by the end. And once she saw that Miles wasn't trying to be, you know, schmoozy in an insincere way, I think she was like, all right, we can do this. But the stupid game night thing was super uncomfortable. It worked, but it was uncomfortable. Any forced game night is hell, especially when all the questions were specifically for Karen and Miles. You know, they were like, what would you do if you just got back from your honeymoon from Mexico and your husband was too polite to make the first move, Karen? I mean, anyone who wants to answer that question, way to go, producers. All right, Brett and Olivia. All right, so Olivia is having brunch with this friend with blue eyeliner. And despite the friend's questionable judgment on that makeup, I applaud her advice. I think she's married. She must be. I think she made a very good point. You know, Brett isn't necessarily the best at reading the room or body language. So she told Olivia, like, you have to be very specific and explicit about what you do and what you don't want to spend money on. You know, what is important to you and how are you going to do it? Because when you say, I just spend whatever, he may take that literally. Just be very specific. Now, over at Camp Brett, Brett and his buddy are catching up, and Brett's doing a lot of finger guns and this mouth click thing, like, hey there, partner. And he's trying to be all punny because he can't just admit he was being a stubborn dick on the honeymoon. And instead, he says Pastor Cal was a big meanie and made him feel insecure when they started talking about salaries and spending. You know, according to Brett, who is now a financial planner in his spare time, he says it's important to prioritize, and there was a misconstruction between he and Olivia. Yeah, you didn't know Brett is also a linguistics master. He has his own language. Oh, Brett. In his attempt to make Olivia sound like she's this fool, she has no idea what to do with her money. She's drowning in debt. She buys more QVC than my older sister. He makes himself look like an idiot. The bottom line is, and Woody agrees with me later, Olivia can spend more because she makes more. Just because she doesn't want to shovel money to the side or to shovel money Brett's way to pay off his house with his indoor tool shed ensuite, that doesn't mean she's foolish in spending or that she's Teresa Giudice. All right, she knows what she's doing. She's a smart woman. She has a good job. Brett is so severely overcompensating, no pun intended, compensating. You know, he's actually drawing more attention to his lack of salary than we would have given time to. No one would have noticed it even after that conversation with Pastor Cal if he would have just shut his mouth about it. But, you know, perhaps It's his loud-ass, boisterous laugh that Olivia referenced with her cousin. If you haven't watched the episode, go back, because she starts telling her cousin how Brett just has an outgoing personality, and they cut to him chugging a beer, and he's like, "Wah, ah, ah, ah." It sounded like a Halloween, walking into like a party city during Halloween. It was perfection. Thank you, Lifetime. You are upping your game. It was almost Bravo TV level editing. God, I'm so hard on this guy. I know I'm hard on Brett. There's just something that's very John Francetic about him, and I project shit onto him. But this is my safe space. This is my podcast. And you know what? Brett chose to be on the show, and my eyes don't have a choice in what they see, and his nostrils flaring, and his nose, and his nostrils looking like a wiener in balls. All right, Woody. Oh, wait, hold on a second before I talk about Woody and Imani. What is a starfish? Do you guys know what a starfish is? Because I don't, and I don't want to Google it because I'm afraid if I Google what is a starfish, first of all, like an actual sea creature, starfish is going to come up. Or I'm going to find some picture of a sexual position where like a girl poops in the sand and then throws it at the person she's having sex with. I don't know. All these gross sexual things that people make up these days between there's something, someone poops in the top part of a toilet and a steamer and something with a donkey, maybe. I don't understand why and how we've come to this place. I feel like we could all just, you know, make it easier on ourselves. Just simplify everything down and just do it like they did in the good old days, in the olden days. Everyone worked way too hard. All they wanted to do was just, you know, knock it out. I just feel like we're overdoing it these days. Everyone's working way too hard. Let's just go back to the good old, I don't know, missionary and opposite of mission. Okay, whatever. All right, I better get to Woody and Imani before I get myself in trouble. These two, what is there to say? They're boring and they're adorable. And this is where the rub about Married at First Sight is. You know, it's boring when they get along, but really that's what we want for our couples. We want to have couples that fall in love and maybe they have babies later, but with them when they do, they're annoying and they're boring and we don't want to watch it. And it's weird for me at this point to watch Woody and Imani because Woody is not really physically my type. And what I mean by that is he's too short. But I gotta say, when he was talking about Brett, basically saying that he's a fool for talking about Olivia making more than him, I was all about Mr. Woodrow. His personality is totally growing on me. I mean, it's too bad he can't actually grow a couple inches, but I was feeling it. I mean, he could get some lifts. Tom Cruise has them. Robert De Niro has them. He could probably pull them off. He would probably wear the right kind of pants, unlike Robert De Niro and good old Tom Cruise. Speaking of Tom Cruise, have you seen that Katie Holmes is now openly dating a new guy? Not Jamie Foxx, some actor from some other movie. I know you're hearing it here first. She's dating some guy from some place who's in something. I would tell you who it was if People Magazine didn't give me endless pages and coverage about Bindi Irwin. All right, let's get into Love After Lockup. It has been quite a few weeks since I've talked about Love After Lockup with you guys because before I took my 2-week break, I think I had Love After Lockup over on Patreon. So it has been quite a few minutes and I hated that this episode was 2 hours. I'm not going to lie because as a podcaster and someone who's taking notes and writing down everything that I observe, a 2-hour episode really takes like 4 hours to watch. So it was a lot, but I loved it. All right, I got to talk about Lindsay and Scott first because Lindsay is finally coming home. So Scott missed her phone call somehow. I don't know, maybe he was flipping around another pen cap and got his lip stuck in it again, but she is coming home. Now, Lindsay, when we meet her, is, I'm going to try to say this as nicely as possible, completely fucking batshit unhinged. She has a mind that is going 100 miles per hour, and I don't know if that is biological or pharmaceutical, but either way, She's fucking crazy. She reminds me of a Jodi Arias 2.0. The beautiful face, the sweet voice, the devil on the inside. I think we can all agree on that one. She scares the shit out of me. Now, poor little Miley Cyrus Grace is all excited that her mom's coming home. You know, she's feeling the love. Can't wait to see her. But we have, I almost called her Jodi. We have Lindsay's mom on the phone. And she's telling Lindsay that the second that she gets the okay that she can drop off Miley Grace, she will dump her off and speed off into the night. Can she at least pretend to be sad that she's going to be dropping Miley off back with her mom? I'm seeing the monster that made Lindsay. She is a very angry under the surface woman. Now let's talk about sweet, sweet Lindsay Arias. The victim of prison bullies. The prison system has been out to get her ever since she stepped foot in it when she was like 14. Somehow she's managed to get her way out and make her way through two airports, which really is a real feat, you know, for that helpless, demure, sweet Southern belle. But she made it, and there waiting for her is her knight in black denim jeans and a swollen lip weighing for her. And turns out her disappointment is immediate because he's short and he doesn't have a limo and he didn't finish building her Lisa Vanderpump's closet. Lindsay is a monster and also a monster bitch. She so brazenly shows her real feelings about Scott's house. And a couple different things to say here. Obviously she's nuts, right? And she's pretty, but she's not that pretty to be thinking she can pull off that bitchy attitude. She has got to check herself because she's still wearing her prison undies and she's still got that polygamous prison poof trying to pop its way out of her bun. So she's got to be a little humble, you know, take a seat for a moment. Now, on the flip side of that, I am not saying that Scott should be pitied because he lied. He knew from the get-go that his house was not even close to being finished, but he figured, well, once she gets here, she's just going to have to deal with it because where else is she going to go? She's going to be so grateful for me that she'll forget about the disgusting floor and the dog hair, and she's going to be so desperate to fuck me anyway that she'll live with it and she'll be happy. No, man. She lied saying that she loves him no matter what, this unconditional love. And he lied to her, making it sound like he had truly a real housewife's house ready for her. Don't have a woman, a prisoner, pick out things from Home and Garden magazine or Vogue or whatever magazine people who have a lot of money who can decorate their own house read and have her think it's going to look like that when she gets home. When he kept saying the closet looks exactly like the picture, I mean, part of that is just being a man, because I really think there's just something in men's brains, no offense, guys, that just don't see physical things that women see. Like, you can walk past and over something for a year and a half, and you will reference it and have no clue what you're talking about. What box? What stack of towels are you talking about? And really, you're like, have you not physically fucking seen this thing? And they really don't. So part of it is Scott just being a man. But the other part is he put minimal effort into it. And as soon as he got that receipt from the Home Depot saying how much it was going to cost to finish it with the front part of a drawer, he just gave up and was like, well, I'll just tell her I'm still working on it. And where's that designer? Call her up. Those two would have a field day with each other comparing notes. What's your daily ritual? Mine is black coffee first thing in the morning and taking two women's essential vitamins from Ritual. And I could proudly say my husband Dave is a huge fan too now. I told you before he was taking some so-called vitamins from who knows where, and they were sitting unused in our cabinets for months. And why? Because they were ginormous white chalky pills, you know what I'm talking about. And according to him, they tasted like metal. Yikes. So I replaced them last month with Ritual for Men, and at first he was skeptical but intrigued because they look futuristic and cool. I know, it's all about the details for him. But the interesting thing was that he turned the bottle over and he saw that Ritual doesn't pack a whole bunch of vitamins and supplements into each vitamin because they know our bodies just don't need it. Ritual believes in food first. Our food provides us with mostly what we need, but there are some gaps in our diet. The new Essential for Men includes different dosages and vitamins than Essential for Women because men's diets and lifestyles are different. Through research, Ritual found men deficient in vitamin A, so they sourced a vegan-friendly, sugar-free, non-GMO, gluten-free, allergen-free source in Switzerland. Women, on the other hand, are more deficient in iron, so Ritual really packs a punch there for us. Now it's easy to get all of our essential vitamins by bundling my monthly delivery of Ritual with Dave's, and I save on shipping. And if you use the promo code I'm giving you, you can save even more. Just $1 a day to have all the essential nutrients your body needs, delivered right to your door when you want it, snooze or cancel anytime, no strings attached. Just these daily changes can lead to big results for all of us. So start small today. Ritual is offering my listeners 10% off your first 3 months. Try it out, satisfaction guaranteed. Go to ritual.com/realityTV to start your ritual today. That's 10% off during your first 3 months at ritual.com/realityTV. Okay, Sean and Destiny. Remember when Sean said Destiny was like this shy girl? She was so self-conscious inside. She didn't want him thinking that she was fat and she's got to lose this weight. And she's just a sincere girl, just a really good woman. Yeah. Well, I'm going to wonder if Destiny's date for Thursday night thinks the same thing about her. I have to talk about the shopping scene from last week because it was so staged. It was one of the worst staged scenes that I've seen on reality TV. I mean, the way that things went down, it was in no way fit for reality TV. Destiny absolutely met that chick when they were already out flirting, or maybe she was like dating slash sleeping with this girl while she was still in prison. I don't know. But you can't just come out and say, yeah, we met at a furniture store. This furniture store employee, I'm putting that in quotes, that's not a good cover story, because even for a furniture store that sells the shit, it looked like it was like used, maybe it was in like rental facilities or a consignment shop, no place like that is going to allow their sales manager to be wearing ripped jeans on the sales floor. And the girl's just like reciting her prison record, soliciting it out for anyone who wants to know about it when she's trying to close a sale. No. Now, let's talk about Sean here, because he's also a liar and a piece of shit. He and Scott are terrible men. They're terrible people. He's a liar. He's a fool. He's an asshole. Really, no one is more deserving of a woman who is also a lying piece of shit and a fool and an asshole. Like, shit attracts flies. And oh, hold on a second. I don't know if that analogy goes anywhere, right? Because shit attracts flies, but flies doesn't necessarily attract shit. All right. I don't know the exact reciprocity of that, but I'm going to find out. And then I'm going to craft that, workshop it, and it's going to be like a line my grandkids are going to know. It's going to be my signature Grandma Jody advice. But you get what I'm trying to say. Now, let's talk about this ring shopping scene, because it missed one thing. If there was a field producer who would have called me, I would have given them ratings gold, rose gold, as a matter of fact. What they should have done is had a hidden camera in the friend's house when he came home and told his wife about Sean buying that engagement ring. Wouldn't you go apeshit hearing a story like this firsthand? Because that wife didn't even like Destiny to begin with. Her spidey senses were pinging like crazy when they went out on that one date night. So I can only imagine how she lost her mind hearing all the tea her husband brought home. God, do you know what I would do if Dave came home with a story like this of a coworker? COVID be damned. I'd be like, get his ass over here right now. We are going to get him naked, wasted, not really naked, wasted, but Real Housewives of Orange County fans, you get me here. We're going to give him a few drinks so that he cannot move quickly when I am repeatedly asking him questions. And I want this dude liquored up enough so that he can sit through an entire PowerPoint presentation on everything I would be able to pull up on anyone. I mean, especially someone with a record. Do you know how well I know Google? Oh, I could have hours of fun with this. This is what I want for a belated 40th birthday present. This is what I want for my anniversary next year. I want Dave to find someone who is about to make a really shitty mistake, who I can save with my research skills. Is that so much to ask right now? This is right up there in like my top five wishes. Next to very fast metabolism and a non-invasive arm slimming surgery. Okay. Well, in case you missed this one part that was during the interstitial during a commercial break, we find out that Destiny drank hand sanitizer in prison. So that means she's probably the only person in the U.S. that's living it up during COVID. You know, there's a potential for a party anywhere and everywhere you go. She looks forward to standing in line, going to Costco, just pump it up, pump it up. I like a bag of wine. She likes a bag of alcohol and sanitizer. Oh, God, it's so gross. And I love vodka, and even that I could not do. Now, as for Sean getting upset later about Destiny spending, it's exactly like Scott. They asked for it. Both of them told their inmate girlfriends that they could spend whatever they wanted when they got out. But now they think that they're so lovable and manly and sexy that Lindsay and Destiny shouldn't remember what they said. You know, these guys want to be loved no matter what, with no conditions, but it doesn't go the other way. They don't love Lindsay and Destiny unconditionally. They want their women a doting, frugal sex pot who does whatever they want, looks however they want, but also doesn't spend a penny. Now, later when Destiny gets pissed off that Sean was talking to his ex, I don't really believe Destiny here. I don't think it actually bothers her that much. I think Destiny was looking for any excuse she could to, well, probably punch him to get some of her anger out. But she was looking for any excuse to break up with them. She is not that into Sean, but she got what she needed from him. She got some new clothes, probably some cash in her pocket. I'm sure she probably withdrew over at the grocery store. I mean, some people do that when they need to like save up for something like Botox or whatever. I've heard. Anyhow, I think she is good to bounce now. She just needed something, anything to throw back at him like it's his fault and she's out of there. Okay, let's hop over to, let's talk about Maurice and Jessica. So he's been out for a week. Last week, they took a run for the border. Oh, now I'm craving Taco Bell. Like really, I'm craving Taco Bell. You know that they changed their menu? I think I told you guys about this. Anyhow, the scene where Maurice and Jessica get to Jessica's parents' house, it was awkward. We all think that him gushing about her parents' house was pretty strange. Not necessarily the way you want a house guest to come in. I mean, he was trying to compliment the house and saying they did a great job, but it kind of came off like he was fishing for something, like he wanted them to offer that he move in. Or maybe if you are hyper paranoid like me, I would be thinking, oh my God, is my daughter and her boyfriend or her husband going to kill me because they want to inherit my house? What's going on? Yet I like Maurice. I think he seems like a very sincere guy. When he was talking to Jessica's dad, I thought it was a really nice moment. I don't think Maurice and Jessica have as deep of conversations as Maurice and Father Jessica do. I don't think that's because of Maurice. I think it's because of Jessica. There's just something that doesn't add up for me with her. I'm hoping we learn a little bit more about her past, because going back to when they got to her parents' house, I thought it was strange that Jessica had to ring the doorbell to go into her parents' house. And I don't buy that that was just for filming, because it would have been just as easy, if not easier, for production to be like, give a little knock on the door, walk into the kitchen, and have her parents staged up ready to film. It makes me wonder if there's something about Jessica's past that her parents don't trust her in their home. Now, John and Christiana. Wow. Christiana is one smart cookie. She has been out of prison for days, maybe a week at this point, and she has managed to avoid having sex with John. Ooh, Mensa, get ready to fill out a new membership card because Christiana's brain is firing on every level of cylinder. You guys, think about this for a moment. Christiana has half of John's everything, half his Frozen Eagle possessions in the eyes of the law, but she's also using the law to evade his loins. I'm telling you, I thought her asking for the application at the diner was pretty smart and harmless, actually. And sure, I know nothing about halfway houses and job search requirements, but I didn't think it seemed like that big of a deal considering Christiana is actually employed and getting paid for her job of filming the show, right? I'm probably wrong, but I don't think her going to this diner was necessarily her fault. I blame John. All John cares about is getting his sex from Christiana. He doesn't care about her probation requirements. Shall we rewind the tape and show how he got her late to her very first check-in because he had to have his pickup truck ceremony? John has no regard for Christiana's long-term sobriety and freedom. He just wants what he wants. He wants to be seen as the savior, and he loves the drama. That's who he is. You can't be married. What did he do? 4, 5, 7 times and not love drama in your life. Okay, Chevelle and Quaylon. These two are actually very boring to me, but Quaylon, you know, got his big boy sex and it must have been at least adequate for Chevelle because we find out that she bought him an automobile. Quaylon, to me, seems fine. I don't think he seems like a scammer or anything like that. I haven't looked at spoilers, so I don't know where he is now or if they're together anymore. But I do think he seems genuinely motivated to stay on the right path and do the right thing. But if Chevelle has ever seen a commercial for Judge Judy, you will hear Judge Judy say, never ever buy a car or sign for a car for someone else. Did you know the judge won't even do that for her own children or grandchildren? Yeah, it's always a bad idea. So needless to say, I am on cousin Chevelle's side. He was very dramatic. He got all into it. He got a little too heated in Quaylon's face, in my opinion, but he's being protective. Does he have ulterior motives? Maybe. But Chevelle was stupid to buy him a car. Don't buy anyone a car. Stay away from any long-term owned possessions or homes for anyone in your life unless you are legally married and they are going to be legally required to pay you half. Now, Heather and Dylan. Holy shit, this new couple. Dylan, who we have not met yet at this point. We just know that he's in prison for residential burglary and possession of ecstasy, and he got 5 years. We know that Heather is very horny. She's a model. She might be a substance user, allegedly, from my untrained eye. Last week's episode, she was in this sex shop, and it was exhausting to watch. I mean, that 3-minute scene, I don't know what she was on or in need of, but the fact that Heather sticks out as crazy on a show called Love After Lockup, that says a lot. So let's dive right into this. Heather's from Chicago, super thin. Like I said, it looks like she might be on something like crack is whack. I don't know. In her talking head later, she looks even more sickly, so I'm very concerned. But she's very horny. She wants to wear head-to-toe fishnet, like not even a dress, just a fishnet tube, basically. But he told her not to. So she settles on a sundress and a muumuu pink blazer, which she then switches to a muumuu black cardigan. I'm pretty sure there's like a middle ground there, but, you know, who am I to argue with a model? God. Oh, I hate to laugh because she's got a really sad history, but it's a lot to watch. And if you are from the area, Heather is driving from Chicago down the old 294 to 88 to go to Joliet's Stateville Prison. Ironically enough, Joliet is the hometown of the one and only Adrienne Curry, winner of America's Next Top Model and star of My Fair Brady and The Surreal Life. And Amanda and I recapped both The Surreal Life and My Fair Brady very recently over on Total Request Podcast. But let's talk about Dylan. Heather is waiting and waiting. She sees him. She runs. She almost tackles him, loses her flip-flops. Although they were right behind her, she took them off like 2 seconds right before and she couldn't find them. Again, is she on something? Probably. But immediately, Dylan starts talking in his own talking head, and my bullshit meter was going off like crazy. According to my own version of the DSM-5 manual, I think this guy is a sociopath. He's got the gift of gab. He was born with a gorgeous face, and he knows it. He's chatty. He knows how to turn on the charm, but it's not in an overly smarmy way. Truly like a sociopath. Like, he could be telling someone he's a missionary priest, and even me knowing his past, I would probably believe him. You know what I mean? You can't be arrested and in jail for that amount of time that he has been since he was, didn't he say he was like 13 or 14? You can't have gone through all of that, been incarcerated in prison systems that long, and present yourself the way he did without having some sort of personality disorder at the very least. Now, Heather, we come to find out, was a stage 1,000 plus clinger stalker, and she tattooed Dylan's name in all sorts of languages and hieroglyphs all over her body before they were ever really even a relationship. She made it sound like they were, you know, love at first sight. They were committed to each other within the first couple weeks and they just didn't get around to having sex. We hear from Dylan a completely other story that they had met. He went to prison, didn't even think about her. And then 3 weeks after he was locked up, she came to visit and his name was tattooed on her friggin' chest. Now, these two are not truly the nation's newest Bonnie and Clyde, then I might have to tattoo Dylan's name on my own chest because something really bad is going to happen with these two. It was uncomfortable on one hand to know the dysfunction that's going on with both of their past, but also uncomfortable because I'm a huge prude and Heather was climaxing all over him in public. Like, could you not? You know, there might be children or middle-aged women with poorly executed Catholic school sex ed watching. It's called manners, all right? Okay, let's talk about our last couple, Tyrese and Chandra. Oof. Tyrese in that blue suit. It takes a confident man, I will tell you that much. And a confident woman to be, oh my God, I mean, Chandra was like fisting this fried chicken into her gullet. She's doing the five finger pop, like the Curly Sue, the within the first hours of meeting a man, you are going to do that. Or perhaps it's not that big of a deal because Chandra doesn't give a shit about what Tyrese thinks. Yeah, Tyrese's story has taken, well, kind of an expected turn. You know, he was playing it up like he and Chandra were soulmates and they had this deep connection. They've been talking for so long. Chandra hangs on his every word, you know? He's her man. But no, we meet Chandra and she's basically like, oh, sweet, I didn't know you were going to be here. Do you think you can just drop me off at the bus station? I call shotgun. There is no way they had a relationship the way that Tyrese implied it. I am sure, well, we all know that she was flirting with him. She told us that. But he was in some sort of relationship or some sort of romance that she was not even part of. It looks like and it feels like Tyrese was talking with someone else entirely. And it's safe to say that Chandra got on that bus and never saw him again, right? We're going to see her next week. She's going to ring him up and be like, "Hey, so thanks for the ride. Turns out I have to go work on a farm and I don't have clear connection cell phone." And she's going to hang up, never talk to him again. Oh, it's getting so good. All right, you guys. Well, thanks for joining me this week on Reality TV. I'll be back next week with more recaps over on patreon.com/lovetohateTV. I will be recapping 90 Day Fiancé Happily Ever After. This week on Total Request Podcast, the hosts of All Right Mary, Colin and Johnny, are coming on to talk about the entire season of All Stars 2 with Amanda and I. That is at the $6 level of Total Request Podcast. And at the $4 a month level, we are going to be watching Season 2, Episode 1 of Netflix You. And last week's episodes, in case you missed them, we recapped Married at First Sight Australia. Whoa, that is so good. I've been binging it ever since. And Disney Plus's Encore. Love that show. If you have kids, you got to watch it with them. All right, that does it. Take care of yourself, take care of each other, wear a damn mask, and as always, stay salty.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.